Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me as panelists this week, I welcome students from Florida High. Here at the round table is Hope Ward. Hope is a junior at Florida High. She's into soccer, orchestra, where she plays the viola, and student council.
Hi.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Bailey Dyer is a senior. She is the president of SGA and
GSA.
Oh, GSA. I can't read. See, I was just talking about that. GSA and loves cooking and gardening. Did I get that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Glad to have you. Elizabeth Walker, I can remember your name very easily. She is a senior, and she is into chorus and GSA and modeling.
Model UN.
Okay, UN, and reading, and all kinds of movies, and on and on and on. Glad to have you.
Good to be here.
And Jaden Larson.
Aiden
Larson, okay. Let me do that one. Aiden Larson is also a senior. Swimming, student council, Netflix, orchestra, those are all his thing. The FBI defines mass murder as four or more murdered during an event with no cooling off period between the murders. The United States has had more mass murders than any other country on earth. Criminologist Adam Lankford estimates that 31% of public mass shootings occur in the United States, although the United States only has 5% of the world's population. Research reports that most mass murderers do not have criminal records or involuntary incarceration at a mental health center. Lankford also found that the United States and other nations with high firearm ownership rates may be particularly susceptible to future public mass shootings. The debate continues on and on. How do we interpret this? What is going on? What is your position on gun control and why? What do you think is going on? And I can just start with whomever. I'm looking at you, so you're in the hot seat. Okay, Bailey.
Well, I believe that owning guns is something that should be heavily controlled. And because not only are people getting shot up in movie theaters and churches and other public areas, they're also getting shot up in schools. There needs to be something that protects our children and protects our citizens from others who are gonna go and shoot them. It needs to be something that's controlled.
And you bring up some good points, and I think we're going to touch on all of those, you know. Where do the rest of you sit? What do you think? How do you feel about this? What's going on?
Well, I believe gun control has to be dealt with, like, in a different way than it is currently. I think other countries have policies where it makes it super hard to get your hands on a gun. And you need to have, like, the right, I guess, credentials to be able to have a gun, I think. And if it was just a pain, more people wouldn't really want to go through that whole process to getting it.
Okay, so you're saying make it more difficult.
Yes.
And possibly folks may not, you know, be interested in getting guns.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Elizabeth.
I don't particularly think that the process has to be more difficult, just that it's more lengthy and a little bit more in depth of the individual, especially, like, I'm pretty sure that recently here in Florida they upped the age that you have to be to get a specific type of gun, and a lot of students that especially went through, like, a Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, mm-hmm. didn't believe that that was enough, Like, there's certain countries that have these lengthy policies in place for good reason, you know, and you can see that by statistics, their amount of mass shootings are definitely a lot lower than they are here. So
yeah, we have the highest.
I definitely believe that there needs to be something in place, whether it be more policies and such, just something.
Okay, well, we're going to explore some of those alternatives. Aiden, what do you think? What do you think? How do we address these mass shootings? And one of the reasons I'm glad to have you, I'm always glad to have you, but, you know, many of the mass shooters are males. You don't hear females going off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you have some added insight into that, or just where do you sit on this?
So, me personally, I believe that the process should be more in-depth, and also what they sell specifically. So what model of gun or how it's manufactured should be more in-depth. I believe the process is, you know, fine. They do the background checks. They go through, you know, mental history. And the red flag system should be...
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that. That's a good point. Mm-hmm.
But I think from, like, a male perspective, I think more people think that it's more common for a male, for a man, to own a firearm. Mm-hmm. I don't say gun, I say firearm.
Yeah.
But I believe that anyone, male, female, has the ability to use it. Right. Most of the time, I don't think it's the person behind it. Or when people say, you know, the guns are dangerous, it's not the gun that is dangerous. It's the person using the gun.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. My next question was, many people say the gun, it's the gun owners and not the guns. The people are doing the killing. What do you think? What is your response to that? Because you've just touched on that, Aiden. So let me hear from the three remaining panelists here, that it's really not the gun. It's the people that are doing it.
there's a lot that can be said on that one.
Go for it.
Well, in my opinion, I don't believe it is one or the other. I believe it is both.
Okay.
And the people are using things like assault rifles to commit mass shootings. And I don't really believe that those should be... I don't believe somebody should... really have their hands on it without the right credentials, because you use guns for personal protection, for hunting, that's pretty much it. You don't need an assault rifle for hunting. You don't need an assault rifle to protect your house from one robber. It's automatic weapons are dangerous, and so are the people who wield them in certain circumstances. So it's not one or the other. I believe it's both.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say an example is, like, you look at Japan, a country with one of the highest suicide rates, people who have extreme mental health problems, and because their process is so lengthy and so in-depth, they still don't have nearly as many mass shootings as we do here. I think that there is just simply too much access, there's too many irresponsible gun owners, and, you know, a lot of these mass shootings that are being carried out by these young boys who have mental health problems, but because the people that they particularly live with, or say the process, they've been able to get their hands on them. It's just people being irresponsible and the background checks not being as lengthy and in process as they should be.
You raised some important issues that I think we need to explore. But I want to hear where you sit, and then we'll raise those issues, you know, because some of the things you said, Elizabeth, make sense, but there's some other little caveats that go with it that really change things. But yes, ma'am.
So I really do think I believe it is the gun owners, because if you look at some of the mass shooters, you see that they're like young males who are, like, I guess, lonely and have a history of mental health problems. And I think if the process was more in depth, more people could, or the gun, I don't know how to say it, but the people who, like, supply the guns, they could, like, see who they're giving it to and see if it's worth it, because we don't want like a gun ending up in the wrong hands. And that's
so, and what I hear, so what I hear you saying is part of the problem may be access to guns.
Yes.
Okay. But and would yes.
I'm gonna piggyback on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to note that it's not just assault rifles, and semi-automatic rifle or just a single bolt action can do just as much damage as any kind of rifle or any kind of pistol or shotgun.
And they can be adapted to turn, you know, to do multiple, you know, rounds. So that's something else that that we really have to consider. But what about the law-abiding citizen? If we are going to put all these restrictions, what happens to them? Should they be restricted? They're law-abiding citizens. They ought to be allowed to protect their family. The key is to keep, and what we're saying, the key is to keep the guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. How do we identify people who shouldn't have them? Because those mass murders that we've had just recently, They got them legally. Everybody did not have a mental health history. In fact, they didn't. One guy, I think his mother, the one that was El Paso, his mother called in. But he was
a white nationalist.
Right. But does that mean you can't have a gun? Because you're a white nationalist?
He posted a manifesto before the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And There's certain things that people do post on social media and stuff that should be red flagged.
Yes.
And I believe that there should be a mental health evaluation, and the law abiding citizens.
Not to interrupt you, but I am.
Yeah, it's okay.
What you're saying on paper is right, but how do we institute this kind of stuff? How do we execute all these things? His mom called in. His mom called the police, and they said, look, we can't do anything. That's not under our jurisdiction. We cannot, just because he's a white nationalist, that's no reason to apprehend him. You're tuned into 411 Teen. We are having a very interesting discussion on mass murders, mass shootings, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and this hour I have students from Florida High. Again, I welcome Hope Ward, Bailey Dyer, Elizabeth Walker, and Aiden Lawson. We are talking about the mass shootings that occur. That today, well over 280 million firearms are in private hands in the United States. Okay? And there's about 30%, 31% of the American households, you know, that report that they have, you know, guns that may not be registered or whatever. That is according to the federal statistics. Gun violence in America takes the lives of 100 people and injures 210 people every single day. Do you feel we are a culture obsessed with guns and violence?
Yes. It is very... it's all over our media. Think about movies, video games, books. American culture is one of violence. Like, there's people who come over from different countries and stuff, and they describe America's people as mean. And, like, really, though.
No, I know what you're saying. I know. I follow you.
And it's definitely something that is integrated in our culture, and they could even stem back to, like, the time where America was just starting and we were still fighting Great Britain. And it's evolved from that to today.
Mm-hmm. Someone here, where everybody else sits. Do you think we're obsessed with guns and violence? It does, I admit, and I agree with you, Bailey. It seems to permeate our very existence. Mm-hmm. You know, every aspect of our existence is permeated with some kind of violence, whether it's the media, videos. There's always some kind of violence that is involved in there. So I agree with you strongly.
To the point where I believe that, like, so many young children are even desensitized to violence and mm-hmm. the idea of guns and gun violence just due to, you know, this new wave of social media and all these new technologies, and kids are constantly sitting in front of TV monitors and everything, and it's just all over our, you know, our internet and in every single TV show, and mm-hmm. just, it's, yeah, it's everywhere.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Like, you see all these video games, like, all these kids are like, have you played the new, like, Call of Duty or, like, Fortnite even, and all those games have to deal with violence, and violence is how you win. And I feel like
good
that
point.
They think that translates into real life, and you have three lives to get it right, but you really don't.
And you make valid points, because the response to that, and I'll come to you, the response to that is that they have violent video games other places, and you don't see, you know, the level, the prevalence of this gun violence, which makes us go back to what you were talking about before we went on break, whether it's access to guns and those variables that play into it. Because other countries have the violent videos. It's not just here in the United States, but they don't have that level of mass shootings or just shootings overall. Mm-hmm. So it gets back to, is not the gun, it's the individual. I mean, I'm throwing that out there for you all to. Where do you sit, Aiden?
I agree that guns in the U.S. has a big aspect to, I guess you can say, who we are, mm-hmm. with quotations.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sometimes scary just to see kids, like, be like, you know, pew pew, and have finger guns everywhere. And, you know, I've shooting guns since I was, I would say little, but I mean, I shot for years. And you have to learn to respect the firearm.
Yeah.
And, like, the videos that kids see on social media, the people, they'll do, like, cool tricks, or, but it's not safe, you know, it's not safe, and they put themselves in more danger than they really need to,
mm-hmm.
and the way people look at firearms, it's just, they look at guns, they think, oh, you know, you can use this to kill someone, that shouldn't be the first thing you think of.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And I, you know, I agree with the whole, firearms in the U.S. is a lot easier to access than any other country. But probably half the reason why we have the most mass shootings. But it's also because a lot of people that buy firearms might not have the proper training behind it.
Okay, and respect that goes
yes.
along with it. Other comments?
I also believe that, you know, with the internet and social media and all this, like, it's almost like it's become ingrained into, like, our so-called, like, culture, where, you know, one depressed kid sees on the news or on the internet that some other kid went out and shot up a school, and the first thing they think is, you know, like, oh, like, that's something that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. it's just, it's very sad.
On August 3rd, a 21-year-old with an AK-47 rifle walked into Walmart in El Paso, Texas, and started shooting. He killed 22 people and injured more than two dozen. Hours later, a man in Dayton, Ohio, killed 9 people and wounded at least 27 with an AR-15 pistol that was modified. You know, we were talking about that. So it could fire, it was modified so it could fire like 41 rounds in less than a minute. I can't even fathom that. I can't imagine that. Both weapons were purchased legally. The back-to-back mass shootings stunned the nation, need I say. It raised a lot of new questions about whether the U.S. needs tougher federal gun laws. What should be the criteria for legal gun ownership? Currently, I think it's 1 in 5 guns are sold without a background check. And you can always get around that. There's a website where individuals, the website connects buyers and sellers. And if they connect directly, they don't even have to deal with the background check. So my question, after saying all this to you, is do we need a federal law to expand the background check for gun sales? And the reason I mentioned federal, because state laws vary. And you could have live in one state and then go to another state and buy it legally. So do you think that if we had a federal law, that that would address it? I don't know, but I'm just throwing that out there.
I believe that there needs to be a lot of long-term and short-term solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely believe that, you know, background checks need to be lengthier and more in-depth. I think that that would be a more short-term to just get that in place.
Mm-hmm.
The long-term would be the whole mental health thing. You know, how do we destigmatize certain things so that, you know, kids aren't so desensitized to violence and guns? How do we change that in the media and our culture? How do we, you know, how do we fix that problem? How do we address mental health so that this isn't the first solution that young depressed kids or even just older people go to, they turn to just automatically?
Okay.
So, let's just change that. So I know for both the shootings, they're automatic or modified.
Right.
And I think that should be a major restriction are those modifications. And then on top of background checks, I would say add a federal law so they have to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
So either like the NRA or I went to a safety class. They had to have maybe like a certificate or some sort of, I wouldn't say a license because, you know, it's, you know, amendments and all that. But some sort of proof of I took time
you
out.
Completed a certain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had the knowledge and it's not just I want a gun, I'm going to go get a gun. But I had to spend more time, and maybe that might push people away. And then also just adding that length. I know that someone said about Japan making it so long, it might push people away. But adding that extra length may change them, give you enough time to either see who they are, like what they're trying to do, or maybe send a red flag here or there, just so that way you can show you what is really the plan behind that firearm.
Okay.
Yeah, I've, like, if you see, like, some of the people that, like, knew the shooter, they saw the red flags before,
mm-hmm.
but didn't say anything.
That's
so
a good point.
I think that they should also go and check other people about them.
But you know, not to interrupt you, but you know, sometimes you all know things, but you don't want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know that, you know that, you know, Jack seemed like he was a little off today. You know, he's been saying weird things, but I don't want to be the one. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the one to say it, you know, because, you know, he could just be having a bad day.
Or maybe he was joking.
Or maybe he was joking. And I'm just wondering if you have any inroads or insights as to how we can get people to feel more comfortable when you question your friend or your peer and, yeah, your antenna go up and you really have mm-hmm. nothing concrete that you can say.
Well, I think then at our school, for example, we have an anonymous thing that we can mm-hmm. actually say things to. And if you see somebody who was acting a bit weird, they're saying weird things, I think every school should have an anonymous mm-hmm. sort of thing where you can say it because it's not at police level yet. You're not getting that kid in trouble.
Right.
Like, and if somebody's name is said into the anonymous little thing, then the guidance counselor can talk to them. Their teachers can talk to them. So it all stays anonymous to the person who originally said it. Mm-hmm. But these things need to, if you see something, you need to say something, because at the end of the day, it could save lives. It could save your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like that's becoming more apparent the more with the more mass shootings that we're having. I feel like kids are definitely speaking up more, even if it's their good. Friends.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I guess the question that we've continually been saying is, you know, how do we address this? How do we get the guns out of the hands of the criminals and the mentally ill? Do you think that the impact of sports and violence has anything to do with our attitude about guns and violence?
I know there are, so we all know those classic high school sports of football mm-hmm. or baseball or volleyball, but I know I've looked into different sports, you know, airsoft where you use replica guns, but instead of shooting, you know, real bullet, it's a little BB or paintball, or you have actual shooting sports where you competitively shoot maybe a pistol, but those ran by usually the NRA or some sort of big, like, association of safety. And that's always one of those big things or big just like aspects of you are using this firearm, you have to, you know, like I said earlier, learn to respect it. But I know sports, I mean, I think you know, of course football, mm-hmm. I also think, you know, shooting sports, but I think those who do those shooting sports learn to respect it. But also just the aspect of some people just get angry at someone else. I mean, it's mm-hmm. competition. What do you expect? But I don't think it would really lead you to trying to, you know, start a mass shooting or something like that.
Yeah. That's pretty extreme to take it to that point. You look like you had something you wanted to say.
I mean, I was just going to bring up the fact that anger doesn't only sprout from sports and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I work at Publix in Southwood, and this summer, somebody shot another person in the road because he had road rage, and they pulled into our parking lot, and we had to call the ambulance. And it's just, not only does there need to be, like, a background check you off, like, I believe there also needs to be some sort of peer evaluation. Mm-hmm. So, like, your bosses, your family members, they go, they're interviewed, basically, on your character and something. Because you can hide that you have an anger issue, like, in a background check. But when you have people who are being interviewed, they'll speak up about that. Because if you have anger issues, they're going to be scared that you have a gun. And that's actually one of Japan's steps. They have 13 steps, and I have it. I have it right here.
You have it right there. I saw something today that I just said I have to get your reaction to and your response. There is a company that has sweatshirts out, a new sweatshirt. You saw it?
Yes.
And the sweatshirts have gunshot holes in mm-hmm. them, and then the names on the sweatshirts are things like Sandy Hook.
Yeah, where the
Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that? What's that about? I mean, how do you all respond to that? Is that something you would buy? I mean, I found that to be just totally disgusting.
I feel like that's just so disrespectful mm-hmm. to the people who had to, you know, experience that. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, it's getting a lot of backlash, and there's a lot of people speaking up about how not okay this was. But, yeah, I saw it, and it just, my heart just, like, it was painful to look at. It was like, how can you try to make a profit off of something like that, especially where people died?
There are ways to raise awareness, and that is not one of them. That is disrespectful to the victims. That is disrespectful to the parents, to the families. It is completely disrespectful. Sorry, I haven't heard about that before. That really,
it's on.
I'm sorry. It's really upsetting.
Yeah, I found it that way too, and that's why I thought, let me bring this up to you. Okay, you got it?
I'm looking up right now.
Okay, all right.
Because this is not a fashion statement. This is a tragedy.
Yeah. Right. And it'd just be so disheartening, especially if I had lost, like, my daughter or something like that, or, like, a brother or sister. Uh-huh.
in this shooting. I would never want to buy something.
Oh, they had people modeling them online. I just wondered, is it just me? You know, because I'm old folks, and do young folks look at this and think, oh, I would like to have this?
I definitely don't.
Yeah. Okay.
I found it, I think it does say something about the people selling it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But at the same time, I get the idea behind it. Maybe, like, I find at first disrespectful, but at the same time, it also could show pride and respect that you're still supporting that school, even though they did go through that tragedy. And maybe it's just like a statement.
Yeah, maybe without the bullet holes.
Maybe without the bullet holes, or just it maybe just like one of those movements that people are gonna wear, you know, sweatshirts with bullet holes or fake bullet holes in it, but. Yeah, I hadn't heard of it until now. But at first I was like, you know, it's super disrespectful. But now seeing it, I'm like, you know, I see why they did it. Maybe to, like, not honor. I wouldn't use honor as a word. Maybe just show, like, hey, I'm not, you know, I'm here to support the school that's gone through it. Not, like, supporting, you know, the incident. Mm-hmm. But supporting their, you know, willing to push through. Or maybe just honor the victims that lost their lives or those who were injured.
Possibly publicity, or maybe even like, hey, look, this is happening. This is something of importance. I don't know. But I just believe that, you know, something that there's other ways that you can promote a school or bring attention to like school shootings and stuff like that. Okay. And this isn't one of them.
Let me interrupt you. I'm sorry about that. We need to take a brief break. You're tuned into 411 Team.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Here in the U.S., gun reform varies considerably according to political party. You have the Democrats, who are generally more supportive, and Republicans, who are opposed. What role do you think the elected officials play and our gun laws and our gun violence?
Our elected officials reflect who they were elected by. And I believe that they should take that to gun reform and stuff. Like, what are the people that you were elected to represent? What do they want? And it really needs to be focused around the population and not personal opinion for them.
Or funding.
Funding, yes.
That's what I was about to say. NRA sponsors a lot of these politicians, and because of that, they don't want to, you know, do, like, gun reform and stuff like that, because they don't want that funding pulled. And it's just really unfortunate. I remember when Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was first shot up, and they came up to Tallahassee, and I went to the rally, and I got to meet a lot of the students, and I just remember how, like, heartbreaking it was to see them interact with these politicians. And they were just so broken down from having gone through something like that. And I just remember so many of them being like, my sibling died.
Well, I know the memories are painful. And when you find that we aren't making much progress, I tell you, I'll be very candid with you. What moved me was when we had the Sandy Hook.
Yes.
And now, you know, the loss of a young life, no matter whether you're in high school. But when you are babies, I mean, when that happened, I thought, okay, for sure, we're going to do something. They were young white kids.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, really. They were young. They were babies. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I really felt like if there's going to be any time that we're going to respond to, that would have been it. And you know what the response was?
Nothing. Nothing happened.
Nothing.
And 3 million American children witness gun violence every year. This is like, I was looking up statistics for this, and this one absolutely broke my heart. So Firearms are the second leading cause of death for American children and teens, but the first leading cause for black children and teens is guns.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So,
because, see, we've been talking about mass murders, but again, as I mentioned, hey, this is going on every day. Okay. I think this morning, John Daly mentioned something about 53 guns here in Tallahassee had been stolen. They had 53 guns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that's crazy.
Had been stolen, and these were coming, I think, mainly out of cars and stuff. And they were trying to tell folks, you know, yeah, we're not saying we want to take your guns away, but it goes back to what you were saying, Aiden, in that you need to have a certain respect for your weapon.
Yes.
You don't leave it in the car.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. If you're carrying it, you certainly don't leave it in the car. Would you leave your wife's purse in the car?
No.
Unlocked?
No.
Mm-hmm. No.
I
mean, these politicians, they just keep sending, like, their condolences and stuff. Mm-hmm. And every time I see that, I'm just like, okay, what now? And there, it's been like years and years and years of nothing. And they're more worried about other stuff that doesn't really pertain to the population of America too much. And they need to be putting more of their time into gun laws and just trying to reduce the number of mass shootings and see what countries that don't have as many mass shootings, see what they're doing to help reduce the number of
Hope
shootings.
You make great points. You know, they're fantastic. But how do we hold their feet to the fire? And I guess I know the answer. You know, we don't keep putting them in office. But we do.
Yeah.
You know?
We do.
Yeah. We keep putting them in office, the same folks. I mean, even the president has not come out and made a strong stance on guns that are killing children and babies. It's very, you know, what do you say?
Heartbreaking.
It is.
It's very heartbreaking.
What we as citizens can do, or just like, because in order, shout out to Mesteed, but in order for our government to work, the people need to be involved. You need to petition. You need to run for office. You need to help.
Show awareness.
Yeah, yes. You need to show awareness. You need to do these things for these things to get passed, because obviously we're tired of children being killed. We are tired of these statistics.
We are. We're tired of it. But it seems like the powers that be aren't tired of it.
Yeah.
Because if they were tired of it, they would be doing something about it.
I think, like, campaigning is all smoke and mirrors with any politician. Once they get into office, you see who you voted for.
Yeah.
And it's kind of tough to see who's actually going to do something and who's not, because they're all talking the same way.
Talk is cheap.
Talk is
cheap. You talk a good game to get to the end. And then once you get that to the end, which is, you know, being elected, then you change your whole game plan.
I'm saying Miss D. Shout out to Miss D again.
I love Miss D.
It was
shout out to Miss D.
Miss D. Sala. So Thomas Edison used, when he came up with an idea, he would have a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to show, hey, I had this idea, but it wasn't just, oh, like you're talking to someone like, oh, I came up with something. You're telling everyone I came up with it, but now you have to back your talk.
Yes.
And that's a major confusion in today's politics.
Yes.
So I know, like, a lot of campaigners, I haven't ran for really anything school wise, obviously not for the country. But
it's a little too young.
But it's, I know backing support is such a big factor in campaigning that it's easy to say stuff. But once they get in the office, they, you know, of course, change a game plan. They, you know, and I feel like a big thing hasn't really been struck is they haven't been personally affected.
Mm-hmm.
So my cousin, her best friend died in one of the mass shootings down here or in South Florida. And it hit more personal than I thought it would, even though I didn't know the person.
Mm-hmm.
But it hurt my family. that now it's hurt me. And I think some politicians haven't gotten that kind of pain or remorse. So, of course, they send their condolences. But like Hope said, it's one thing to talk. But, I mean, forget background checks. Just trying to figure out how. Like, you know, everything runs by a system, some sort of quote-unquote algorithm, you know, of life. Yeah. And
yeah,
we haven't figured it out yet, but we need to figure it out.
Soon.
Because these things keep happening, and no one's... Same reaction every time. It's a cycle. Mm-hmm. And someone, something, a petition or a rally, or not just, you know, at Florida Capitol, but maybe at D.C. or, you know, just everyone around the country taking the time out, maybe one day, to speak for the government, sign a petition, get it on the ballot. So we don't just have, you know, kids growing up, but we have the adults finally being aware, like, you know, I might not have kids, but these kids really, really feel, you know, this.
Yes.
Feel for this to be added to the petition.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember when we were up at the Capitol and some of these kids were, like, talking to these politicians. They were just getting blatantly ignored. Mm-hmm. Some of them laughed at. It was very heartbreaking to see that. And I remember a lot of them saying, if you had gone through what I had gone through, you would be standing here with me. Mm-hmm. And them just, like, breaking down. It was just so sad to see.
But what does that say, that all that you all are sharing and there's still no movement?
Some of them want to put guns into schools, back into schools with teachers.
Yes. How do you feel? About teachers being armed?
I have a really big point. I have a really, really big point for this one. I was talking to Lizzie in the car about it. It's teachers are there to teach.
Yes.
They are not there to potentially shoot one of their people that they're teaching. Yes. And in America, we have a problem with our authority, I don't want to say this, our authority killing unarmed black men in the street. What do you think is going to happen when they walk into an active shooter situation and see a black teacher with a gun?
Well, actually, in schools, they teach us, they say, if there's an active shooter situation and you somehow manage to get the shooter unarmed or, you know, they're unconscious, something like that, they say, don't touch the gun because we're going to be in there and whoever has a gun, we're going to shoot them.
So why would you put somebody in the situation where they have their own gun?
Yes.
My mother is actually a teacher. She's a librarian, but she has taught for, you know, she taught... You know,
she taught me.
Two out of the four. She actually taught me for a little bit. But my mom came home one day, and this says something, and they taught them how to properly, you know, suture a bullet hole. Ooh. Or just like... She's not anti-gun, but she is anti-person with the firearm. Mm-hmm. So when she said, today I had to learn how to make a tourniquet out of a belt or, you know, a shirt, it says something. And, you know, her coming home and, you know, I don't worry about it too often, but, like, one day, like, my mother could, you know, risk her life to save someone and... I mean, honestly, I don't want to lose my mother yet, and
they're not even paid enough.
that's the whole topic for itself. I mean, it's just having that close of a relation to arming teachers. Like Bailey said earlier, teachers aren't meant to have firearms.
Yeah,
they're there to teach. They're here to support, you know, educate the children of the future.
Yeah,
and by adding that extra layer of responsibility, I'll say responsibility, because they do a lot already, you know, trying to maintain those kids and, you know, all these protocols I have to remember. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having to know how to do that is scary. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like that just raises more questions. It's like, how are we going to, like, are we going to pay them more? Because now they have to do all this training, and now they have this extra responsibility, and it's like...
I think they should refuse to do it.
Yeah,
I mean, that is not what they were hired to do.
Yes. Exactly.
You know?
Where in the learning environment do you learn gun from? I mean, seriously, like, it's not okay. Kids already don't feel safe at school as that, is.
Yeah. Do you all feel safe?
No, I do not. I heard, and for example, like, right and now. After.
No, how do you handle that?
Well, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, it rains, and then, like, thunder strikes, and you'll hear kids going, like, screaming and stuff, being like, that better not be a gunshot. This, like, a balloon pops, and kids freak out. And then we have this whole situation where, you know, if it's a fire alarm, is it because someone's getting us in a big group so that they can shoot us?
Yes.
Or is it because there's an actual fire?
I thought about that.
Yeah, and I remember after Stoneman Douglas, we had a fire alarm. Mm. It wasn't announced that it was a fire alarm. There were children having panic attacks. They were texting their friends. They were texting their family. They were crying because they didn't know if this was their last chance to be alive.
Mm-hmm. That was, I remember that was hectic because it was right after Stoneman Douglas. And I think someone just tripped it accidentally, but we were all confused. This is like middle of the day, like wasn't even lunch yet.
I refused to leave the classroom.
I was in my math class. I was like, we're like, do we leave? No one, like over the PA system, no one said, this is just a drill.
Yeah. Or, oh, you didn't get that.
Like, no. Mm-hmm. Like, usually
somebody tripped it.
Oh.
So usually the teachers might get like a warning, or they might, or the PA system be like, hey, you know, construction might, you know, trip the alarm. That happened once this year.
Yeah.
But we didn't. Twice.
We didn't know.
We didn't know.
We did, yeah.
So we were sitting there confused. You know, we turned the lights off just in case it was a lockdown. Mm-hmm. We still kind of stood around trying to figure out if it was a fire drill. Mm-hmm. And finally, after about, what was like 2 or 3 minutes, the administration finally said, this is a fire, you know, this is a fire alarm. This is not like a drill. This isn't a lockdown test. It's a fire alarm. Like,
what type of security do you have at your school?
We have
resource officers,
and then our doors are constantly locked. But that's something that I've constantly brought up to people. Our doors lock behind us, and when we have a fire alarm, say if there was an active shooter situation, and we all left, and we went outside, and we were all in one group, and all of our teachers are out there with us, if an active shooter situation happened and our doors locked behind us, and say our teacher ended up, you know, getting shot or something, they have the keys. We have to run. We have to.
We can't.
You know, say we're in a situation. We can't get back into class.
We can't hide.
Our doors are locked behind us.
That's one of the main things they tell us to do. If you can't run, you hide.
Yeah.
We can't hide.
We can't hide.
It's like,
what's the alternative? I mean, it just seems like it's, to me, in listening and hearing what you have to say, it's a no-win situation. No matter what, you're going to be freaked out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and do you want to run back inside?
Can we even get back
inside? You can't get back. I mean, would that be something you want to do?
If you can't, if you can't get away, like, fast enough, inside's your only option.
Yeah, the scary thing is, like, I'm scared, like, the shooter could, like, shoot the lock and kind of disable it altogether.
Okay, I know, me personally, I'm constantly evaluating ways to exit a building, especially at school. Like, if I'm in, like, a movie theater or something, I'm constantly looking for the exits. I'm thinking, okay, there's this many people in here, like, the doors are going to be crammed, like, stuff like that. And it's sad, and it's scary, and it shouldn't have to be a thing.
Yes.
And, I know, for example, in our advisory...
How do you all function like that?
And I mean, it's just barely.
I can't imagine being... It's sort of like always being on the edge of your seat.
Yes. And I really am. And I'm one of those people who really worry. And I have siblings.
Oh, I don't blame you.
I have siblings at school. And sometimes I catch myself thinking, like, it would be so much easier if my siblings didn't go here. Because if something happened, I wouldn't have to worry about anybody else but, like, my friends. But I have to constantly worry about my siblings as well.
But we have to remember that those school shooters that are students know what to do.
Yeah,
it's not like,
that's right.
It's not like, they're going to guess where the people are.
They
know they're going to lock in this part of the classroom.
Yeah.
They know they're going to lock these doors, these classrooms.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, we have quite a couple classrooms that have big windows.
Yes.
Looking to the classroom. Last thing, they lock the door, but... They can
We're out of time.
And then if it's a teacher.
We are out of time. I appreciate you all. Many, many thanks to my panelists. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your feelings. And to my listening audience, thank you for your ear and your interest. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.